Welcome to the SOAP video series from Oak Tree Community Church in South Bend, Indiana. We have been, just this last time we started working our way through the book of Numbers.
Yeah, I think we're in our third chapter, right? We did
chapters 1 through 3 last time. We're skipping 4, not because it's not important, but it's one of those areas in Numbers where it just breaks down into numbers. It's just, you know, counts and whatever. So we're skipping 4 in the reading, and this week we're going to do chapters 5, 6, 7.
And 8.
Yeah.
Pieces and parts.
Right, yeah, right. Not the entire thing. And in fact, in chapter 7, we're reading only a few verses at the beginning and a few verses at the end. Right. And we'll tell you why when we get there.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, good. Good. So, you know, as kind of a recap, basically started a brand new book with Numbers, and it's really the time of Moses and the Israelites when they come out of Egypt and working their way to the Promised Land. Now we have Exodus, which is the time of Moses leaving, and you know, it's the same time,
right?
Then we also have Leviticus, which is the same time, the giving of the law. So we really kind of have 3 books that are happening at the same time. So we do have, and of course they're different, and they're different focuses with what's going on here. But it's kind of interesting to see laws coming up in Numbers.
Yeah.
And we see that this week.
Yeah.
And it's like, oh, that should be in Leviticus. That should be, you know, someplace else.
Right.
And it's like, no. It's here too.
Yeah. So Exodus tells of the story of their exiting,
getting out of Egypt,
and they come to Mount Sinai.
Right.
And it takes them 3 months or so to get there.
Yeah.
And then they actually park at Mount Sinai for a year. And it's during that year that Leviticus takes place. And the whole book of Leviticus.
The whole
book of Leviticus takes about 30 days. Okay. And so Numbers then picks up and says, okay, we're getting ready to consecrate, dedicate this tabernacle that we built back in Exodus. And we got the laws in Leviticus. And then we're going to be on the move to Canaan. So Exodus, Numbers are really sort of back-to-back as far as chronology.
Okay. So we see in chapter 5, there's going to be a number of laws or rules that come into place. So would that not have happened in Leviticus?
Yeah, I think in Leviticus, Exodus and Leviticus, they got the whole package. It's like, you know, here's all the laws, 613 laws.
Yeah, and now they're kind of working their way through them.
Yeah, so we're getting ready to consecrate the tabernacle so it can be used.
Right.
Okay, they've been building it. It's built. They're getting ready to make it usable. And so God's like, okay, now let me remind you of a few things. And so in chapter 5, we really get a summary of just some. Maybe dozens, maybe hundreds, but probably dozens of the laws that we've already read are packed into a neat little package, and God says, don't forget.
Yeah, so God starts out in chapter 5, you know, then the Lord spoke to Moses, and each one of these is a law or a set of laws around something.
Yep.
But it's kind of interesting, right, that God talks to Moses, he's the head, and Moses needs to deliver it to the nation of Israel.
Right.
And they need to follow and listen.
Yep.
So, you know, hey, God said.
Yeah.
Don't
shoot the messenger.
And we know things go bad for the Israelites. But for right now, they are tentatively listening.
Yeah.
And things are happening. And, and they're doing their best to follow all these laws.
Yeah. And each section, it's interesting, through chapter 5, we get into chapter 6. And the Lord said to Moses, and the Lord said to Moses, and the Lord said to Moses. And so that phrase actually helps us, even if we didn't have headings in our Bible, that phrase helps us see it in chunks. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So kind of cool.
Yeah.
So the first one is ceremonially unclean people need to leave camp.
Yeah.
They need to go to the outside.
Yeah.
So last week we had talked that we have the tabernacle in the middle, and then we have the Levites around them, and then in specific areas were the tribes.
Right.
And they were always in that specific area, and that's the way they traveled, that's the way they slept. But if you think about it, you know, we were talking that there's probably a couple million people there, maybe more, and foreigners that would have been dispersed around there. Somebody's going to get sick.
Right.
Somebody's going to have a wound. Somebody
Right.
You know,
how do you have somewhere between 2 and 3 million people and nobody's getting sick of anything? Yeah, right. Exactly.
Right. So he brought out three categories. A leper, which in our mind is, but was probably most skin diseases.
Yeah, pretty much any skin. It's not what we would consider. I mean, today leprosy is called Hansen's disease. It is a very specific thing.
Right.
Leprosy in the Old Testament is pretty
umbrella
term.
Right. Also, if you have a discharge, that's a pretty one. Or if you've come in contact or defiled by a corpse, was another way to put it. And, you know, from our standpoint, it's like, what?
Yeah.
But people are dying
all
the time. And you want to, you want to take care of your dead, but there's also diseases that you had to worry about too.
Right.
So it's if you had a problem, you weren't kicked out of the nation of Israel.
Right.
You just had to go to the outside until you got better.
Because if I'm unclean because I've done one of these things or I have one of these things and I come into contact with you, then you're unclean.
Yeah. Now it's,
it just snowballs.
I think we call
that
a pandemic.
You're right. Yeah. But it's not just sicknesses. Okay. It's not just sickness. There's also the ceremonial side of things.
Right.
And if you're ceremonially unclean, even if you're not sick, you can't come to the tabernacle and worship.
Yeah.
And so I do notice that it's only the sick people or the, you know, the unclean people that are quarantined. They're isolated. Yeah. It's not everybody. Everybody else gets to go out about their business.
Good point. Yeah, one of the commentaries I was reading made a statement that, you know, the closer you got to God, the more holiness he expected, which also meant the more ceremonial clean you needed to be too.
Right.
And I thought that was interesting. And then came about too was in another commentary that said, this is where we got cleanliness is next
to
godliness.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know if that's true or not, but it seems that way.
Now think about this, because if that's true, which it is, you know, God designed this thing as an example of how we're supposed to, or you know, how they were supposed to approach him and everything. We have the Holy Spirit living inside of us. We don't have a temple, we are a temple. And if it's true that the closer we get to God, you know, think of Moses and the burning bush. God said, take your shoes off, you're on holy ground, type thing.
Right.
We don't go to God anymore. He's actually living inside of us.
Yeah.
So what does that mean as far as walking the path and becoming more like Jesus and becoming more holy?
Yeah, a little bit of a scary thing.
It's just the thing. That's one of those little, honestly, that's one of the things that we do this for, right? Is to bring out some of those things because we need to be reminded of these things. Why are we reading through this stuff in the Old Testament? Who cares? Well, it tells us stuff about God, you know, and God doesn't change.
And his character and his actions.
Right. Yeah. So if that's how he did it here as an illustration, you know, how can we apply that today? Well, I don't have to go to a tabernacle. He's here. Oh, well, then maybe.
Yeah. Well, interestingly enough, that kind of goes into the second one where there was a restitution for sin that was put in place. And when I was first reading it, it was I wronged somebody and now I have to pay them back. Right. And if that person is no longer living, then I go to the relatives and if the relatives aren't there, then it goes to God.
Yeah.
Right. Or the priests.
Yeah.
And it's kind of interesting from the standpoint of, you know, God expected to be paid. And I think it was last week there was even a price for, you know, 200 Levites.
Yeah.
Right. Which really wasn't much money, but.
Right.
But that's the level that God wants us to be and to be thinking about.
There are consequences for what we do.
Right.
And so if we wrong somebody.
Right. You know. Well, not only do you have to pay them back, but a fifth more too.
Yep.
Damages. I love how specific.
Yeah. It's specific damages.
It is.
This is, if you think of the Lord's Prayer, each of the aspects or each of the statements in the Lord's Prayer connects to something in the Old Testament because they were still Jews living under the Old Testament law when Jesus did that. Mm-hmm. Right. So forgive us our debtors or forgive us our debts. The way we forgive
our debtors.
right? And that's an Old Testament concept. Okay, it doesn't translate directly into how we live today for several reasons, but the Old Testament concept comes back to how did we recompense, how did we make right the wrongs that we do to somebody else and somebody else does to us.
Right. Right. Then probably the longest section in there is the, at least in my Bible says, the jealousy ordeal.
That's such a weird title.
Yeah, but it's kind of cool because it is an ordeal because it was like a really long section. But basically, if a man believes that his wife committed adultery, and in fact it's even less than that, if he's just plain jealous,
yeah,
he can invoke this, and there are specific steps that need to be taken, and they are painfully laid out.
Yeah, right. In great detail.
Yeah, yeah, right. And it turns out if the wife is guilty, her abdomen will swell and her thigh will fall away.
Yeah,
is what they say.
Yeah. So I think there's some euphemisms in there, yeah, because ultimately what it comes down to is she will no longer be able to have children.
Yeah.
Which is a big deal when you're trying to carry on family names and everything.
Right. And by the way, if innocent, she'll have no ill effects and will be able to bear children.
Right. Right. So you're reading through this and you're like, man, this is so weird. It's so foreign to our culture and everything. Yep. But different cultures, even in America's history, use passages like this, and there's similar passages for like witches. Think of the Salem witch trials. Think of these. We still use the term witch hunts to hunt somebody down, to track somebody down who we think may possibly, whatever. And this is where it comes from. That doesn't mean that this is wrong. It just means that it's applied in a wrong way because this doesn't apply to us. It doesn't apply directly to this was for Israel at that time because God was trying to make a point, trying to set Israel apart from everyone else around them.
Right. Right. So in chapter six, I'm sorry, were you done with that?
Yeah.
Okay. Chapter six again starts with the Lord spoke to Moses and it's talking about a Nazirite vow.
Yeah.
Do I have that right? Nazirite?
Yeah. We got to be careful. Some people confuse that term with Nazarene.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. So Nazarene is somebody from Nazareth.
Right.
Right.
Like Jesus.
Jesus was a Nazarene, but not a Nazirite.
Right.
A Nazirite is this person who, takes this vow and does these certain things. It's a temporary vow where it's not completely explained, but it's I am setting myself apart to God for this period. It's going to include fasting of some kind. It could include all sorts of things, but for this time, I am going to dedicate myself just to God. Is it going to be prayer? Is it going to be a mission? Is it going to be something?
Right. Right. It seemed like there were three big things. There was some abstaining from strong drink.
Yep.
And grapes are in there.
Anything from the vine. Anything from the vine at all. Yeah.
Right. You have to let your hair grow long.
Yeah.
Which is maybe an outward indication to others that you are doing this vow. And then must not come in contact with a dead body.
Right. So it's important.
And if it does happen, there are some rules around it.
So, anything from the vine, well, I mean, they had wine, they had grapes, they had raisins, they had all this stuff. That stuff wasn't sin.
Right.
But for a Nazirite, somebody underneath the Nazirite vow, so it wasn't sin, but it was, okay, I'm fasting from those things, right?
Yeah, when you had said fasting at that.
Yeah, so same thing with the long hair. It's not right or wrong to have long hair. But it would have been wrong at that moment for that person, for that time, to cut their hair, to shave their beard or whatever. But it's not wrong to do that. It wasn't sin to do that. So all of these things, they're just taking a break from.
Right. So who do we know in the Bible that has done this? When we go to hair, we think of a guy, Samson.
Got to think of Samson when you come to hair.
Yeah, right? So is that...
Yeah.
He did have a...
Yeah, so in the book of Judges, Samson was an interesting one because
He was a judge, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Before he was born, before maybe even he was conceived, the angel came to his parents and said, you will have a son, and from the womb he will be a Nazarite, which means he can never.
Oh, so he was for life.
For his life. He can never have wine. He can never have anything from the vine. He can never cut his hair. He can never touch a dead body for his entire life. So this, in his case, it was an oddball case because it wasn't him willingly taking a vow for a short time. God said, you will be a Nazarite for your entire life.
And then, of course, his hair was cut. He lost his strength.
He touched the dead body, touched the lion carcass. He drank wine at parties and stuff. He broke literally every rule all the way down. Okay. And yet God was still able to use him, but not to the extent had he been had he been faithful.
Right. So Samuel also is in.
Samuel was his mom Hannah dedicated him to the Lord from like a very young age.
Right.
I don't know that he was necessarily a Nazarite his entire life, but it's possible. Yeah.
So how about John the Baptist?
It's a good question. Don't know. Maybe he did.
Yeah. Just his actions seem like it could have been, but
yeah, it never says that he did. Paul did. And then, Paul did for one trip back to Jerusalem. We're told that he had to fulfill some of the aspects of his vow, and this is the only one that we can, you know,
that makes sense.
That makes sense to do.
And I think then it said he got a haircut. which when you it's in Acts, right? So you're reading in Acts, and it's like, oh, Paul got a haircut. What? Like, what does this have to do with anything?
And so Paul
this
made
is what it. Has to do.
Right, Paul made it back to Jerusalem, saw his barber. Okay, that's a little bit too much information that we needed. But he was fulfilling a vow, and he went to the temple and he did the sacrifice or the offering, that's laid out here in number 6.
And then at the end of chapter 6 is a priestly benediction.
It's that one that people love to quote. You hear it a lot, and you know, may the Lord's face shine upon you. You know, may He bless you, and
give you peace.
Yeah, is and you know, lift up His face upon you and give you peace. Yeah,
that is a good one, and I think I grew up hearing this almost weekly.
Yeah. And it's interesting because it's another one of those sections. The Lord spoke to Moses, so it sets it apart from everything else that's around it. And he said, tell Aaron and the priests to actually say this blessing to the Israelite people.
Oh, nice.
So it's not a blessing to the priests, but it is a priestly blessing that God gave the priests to give to the people. Yeah.
Okay. All right, so then we get into chapter 7. Chapter 7, we're reading the first 9 verses, and then we're skipping to the end and reading the last, 5.
This is the second longest chapter in the Old Testament, probably in the whole Bible, actually, come to think of it.
So 89 verses total.
Yeah.
And we're getting away with reading 10?
Yeah, right.
15?
Yeah, 15. Psalm 119 would be the longest. Yeah. And this is going to be the second longest. And basically what they're doing is they're getting ready to finally, they've built the tabernacle, but they haven't put it into service yet. They're getting ready to put it into service and they need to consecrate it to God. They need to cleanse it. They need to consecrate it. And all of the tribes stand up and they bring an offering.
Yeah. So, and it lists in detail, right?
Yeah.
Who's bringing? I don't know if we want to get into that much detail, but.
No, not really. But the part that we're skipping is each of the 12 tribes brings the exact same thing, which is why we're skipping it, because you read it, you're like, didn't I just read this? And didn't I just read this twice? And didn't I just read this four? I'll bet they all say
so now you got to read the rest to see, right?
To see if there's any deviation.
Wait,
hey, never mind. Simeon brought only 3 instead of 4.
Yeah. Well, and you wonder if, you know, they finally come down to, guys, this is not a contest. This is not a good, just, all right, everybody bring 3. Everybody bring 5. Everybody bring.
Right, and we're all bringing this equally. And nobody gets in special good graces with God because they brought a bonus, you know, or whatever. Yep. Everybody brings, but also nobody's left out.
Yep.
This wasn't such a big thing that the large tribe brought more than the small tribe. It was everybody brings the same thing.
But this also helped fund the Levites.
Yeah.
Right.
Right. So I did some math.
Yep.
And we're told that there were a total of 2,400 shekels of silver worth and 12 times 10, 120 shekels of gold worth of stuff that was brought, plus animals. I didn't even add up the animals because I don't know what they cost.
Yeah.
But based on some numbers that I found, just the gold and the silver stuff together, about $72,000 worth.
Okay. And then times 12, right?
No, that is the times 12. Okay. Yeah, that's that's the whole package. Okay. That by the time 12 tribes bring everything together, they're funding, basically there's the starting budget of $72,000.
Yeah.
So,
I mean, a lot of money at that time. That's for sure.
Yeah, it's not you know, it wasn't meant to make it wealthy.
Right.
But it also wasn't actually money. It was pans and it was bowls and it was stuff that it probably was
put in use.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely was put in use, but it was about you know, 72,000 worth of equipment. So maybe it would be maybe more like, you know, the equipment, the assets, the inventory, than it would be the actual bank account. Good. Plus a ton of animals.
Right. So in chapter 8, we find again the Lord spoke to Moses. Yep. And it's kind of funny. It was, hey, tell Aaron that.
Yep.
But Moses had to tell Aaron that... in the tabernacle, there was a lampstand.
Yep.
And that the lampstand is for light.
Yeah.
Which I think we knew that beforehand. So why was it so important to call that out?
Because it was God had given really specific details about what it was supposed to look like and how it was supposed to function.
On it, right. And Seven lights, maybe?
Yeah, similar to a menorah,
right.
What we would consider a menorah, but not exactly the same. So in the tabernacle, you'd have this large, let's say, outer fence, okay, with a courtyard. And in the courtyard was the basin where the priests would wash and the altar, right. So that people would bring their sacrifices. Then you have an inner build, and that was open air. Then you have an inner building, which was not open air. It had a roof of something. You know, it had to be torn down. You know, so that they could move. So it had these animal skins or whatever on the roof, and it was divided into two thirds and one third. The two thirds in the front was the holy place. The one third in the back was the most holy, or the holy of holies. Where the Ark of the Covenant was in there, right?
Right.
Well, in this front two thirds was the lampstand and the altar of incense. And some other things, I think, too. But that lampstand then lit up the Holy of Holies, which ushered the way to the most holy place. So it couldn't be dark in there.
Yeah,
it wasn't supposed to be dark in there. It was supposed to be very, very bright, even though it was not open air.
Okay. Also in chapter 8, the Levites needed to be purified.
Yeah.
So it was, here's how. And then once done, they started working on the tent of the meeting.
Yep.
And remember, these were gods. He bought them, you know, last week.
Right.
So now they're purified.
Yep.
And then in verse 19 in chapter 8, it says, you know, the reason for this was to make atonement for the Israelites so there'd be no plague for the Israelites when they came near the sanctuary.
So that really sort of brings us back full circle to the beginning of chapter five, right? Because if you're unclean, you can't come near. So make sure you get rid of all the uncleanness first.
Yep.
And I'm going to have these Levites serving to help people.
Yeah. Well, when they're purified themselves.
Yep.
And then, helping people.
And they sort of build, in a sense, they build a barrier between the people and God to make sure that somebody who is unclean doesn't approach God, and then God has to give judgment for it.
Right.
So by doing what they were supposed to do, they were actually serving God and protecting the people.
Right.
In a sense.
Nice. Speaking of them serving, one of the last things in there that I read, the Levites did their work between the ages of 25 and 50.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought it was interesting that there was an established start date and end date
yeah.
on there. it kind of makes sense from an elder standpoint. I know when we were doing some elder study, it wasn't that there was an age for the elder, but there was a maturity, right? Yeah. That they needed to be to go through tests first. Yeah. And it seems like the same thing with a 25-year-old, because you know, there's quite a difference between a 18-year-old and a 25-year-old.
Yeah, absolutely. And
some years behind them.
Yeah.
But why stop at 50?
I honestly don't know. Yeah. It could be just because there are so many. I know by the time of Jesus, I've read that there were so many people from this clan, from the Levites, that if they weren't aged out, you could actually go your whole lifetime and never serve. So you have to be able to age out so other people can have their time in there. Which brings up an interesting point. In Luke chapter 1, we have the story of Zacharias and Elizabeth, John the Baptizer's parents, right?
Right.
Zacharias was of a particular order. They were broken into 26 groups, the Levites, 26 groups, and you served, they served 26 or 13, I don't remember. It's either 2 weeks a year or two twos a year, right? Whatever. I think it was 26. Anyway. And in Luke 1, it says that it was his clan's turn to serve, yeah. And then within his, or with his root group, and then within his group, it was his turn.
Right.
Well, if your group is only serving once or twice a year, when was the last time that he had actually served? Had he ever done this before?
Right.
Well, we get this idea that he's an old man. I've always had this idea that he's an old man. You know, he's in there and his wife is old and past childbearing years. But if they age out at 50.
Right, he was younger than 50.
You would think that if they're still following this, then Zacharias was younger than 50.
Yeah.
And 50's not an old person.
50's getting younger every day. Yeah. Yeah.
So he was, it's funny because, he actually says in the Greek text in Luke 1, he says, how can this be? Gabriel says, your wife is going to have a son. Yeah. You know, and he says, how can this be? Because I am an old man and my wife, and you never call your wife old, yeah. right? And my wife is advanced in her days.
Very nice way of putting it.
So she was old enough that he thought she couldn't have children, right. But it's not like these were 70 and 80 year olds, right. Probably.
Right.
No, like sometimes yeah. we think, you know, right. Oh, these old people, you know, he was probably less than 50.
Yeah.
Or maybe if he says he's an old man, you know, he may be pushing 50 because he's going to be aging out of here or whatever.
Right.
So what are the takeaways of all this stuff? Again, why do we care? That we read all this stuff that the Israelites had to do back in the day.
I care because God cares, and He cares enough to put this down. He cares enough to keep track of all these things. So in my life, you know, He's keeping track too, and He notices things. And maybe that's my takeaway.
Yeah.
And yeah. How about you?
Well, a lot of this very similar. You know, details matter.
Yeah.
You know, sometimes we go through life and there are, I honestly believe there are things that God really doesn't care about, you know, really. Yeah. I mean, it's like, you know, A or B, just pick one, you know, just do something. Yeah. Right. But there are things obviously He does care about.
Right.
And He cares enough that He's going to be detailed. And one of these is you can't come to me unless you're clean and holy. And that's really what salvation does, is it's not our own cleanness, holiness, it's God's right or Jesus' righteousness in us that gives and to us, church age believers, He says, come boldly to the throne of grace.
Yeah, which is quite a bit different.
Very different. Yeah. He didn't say come boldly to anything.
Right. Y'all better think twice first.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I find that
Interesting.
And it's not that God has changed, but here He's showing His standard of holiness. And in our age, He's fulfilled it through Christ, you know. So
right. Good.
That's my takeaway on that.
Good.
Well, next time we'll pick up a few more chapters here in the book of Numbers. And Don't get anxious. Don't get impatient here. We are getting to some stuff that you may be surprised to find in the book of Numbers.
Ooh
yeah.
Nice.
And
nice little tease.
Yeah, you may not be. You may know this all already, and you're like, oh, I know everything in the book of Numbers. That's fine. You can be on the video. And but there's going to be some stuff coming up that you're like, oh, I wondered where that was. That's coming up soon, so stick around. We'll see you next time.
All right. Bye, all.